Welcome to Headlock, where we wrestle with ideas from free market heavyweights like Hayek, Friedman, Buckley, and Flair. It's a no-holds-barred discussion promoting individual liberty, competition, and consumer choice while challenging soft-headed ideas from the left and right. Prepare for logic, humor, and the occasional figure four leg lock. Are you ready? Are you ready? Let's get it on.
Welcome to Headlock, the official podcast of the John Locke Foundation. The COVID-19 pandemic has disrupted all of our lives. In this edition of Headlock, we highlight responses to that disruption. First, you'll hear John Locke Foundation CEO Amy Cook. She talks about this organization's role in helping policymakers steer their way through tumultuous times. Amy spoke recently with the John Locke Foundation's Donna Martinez.
When elected officials, the legislature, and the governor get together and they start trying to figure out how do they respond to what we're seeing in our state, they are not going to make those decisions in a vacuum. And that is because researchers here at the Locke Foundation have already put together a package of recommendations, and we hope that they'll follow those.
Absolutely. You bring up a great point. Legislators, lawmakers, elected officials, they have to make decisions about so many things on any given, you know, in a normal year, let's just say a normal year, they may have hundreds of bills to consider, which is why a resource like the Locke Foundation is so incredibly important. And we have 30 years of intellectual capital that we're now drawing on and that lawmakers can draw on. For the last 30 years, we've been providing sound public policy solutions for whatever situation elected officials have found themselves in. And right now, we're in this unique situation, as we all know. And so as lawmakers, we're trying to, you know, grapple with this. What are we going to do? The policy innovators here at the Locke Foundation went to work immediately. It was pretty amazing to watch. As the CEO, I couldn't be more proud, because I think I talked to them. We had this conversation on a Thursday, and they worked all through the weekend. So we started putting up policy solutions for them to consider the following Monday. That's how quickly they were able to turn it around. There's a couple of reasons for that. One, 30 years of providing policy solutions. So these are people who know exactly what they're doing. Also, many of the ideas that we had suggested before are things that would make it easier for government and for private businesses to deal with this crisis. Reducing regulations, especially like the certificate of need law, so that doctors and hospitals could make decisions as opposed to going to the state to get permission. There were telemedicine was another. We've been working on telemedicine, and here it is. It is telemedicine's moment in time. So we had actually been laying that foundation for a very long time, 30 years of work, 30 years of intellectual capital. And so when this popped up, and nobody can see anything like this, nobody expected a pandemic ever, right? But 30 years of laying the foundation of sound public policy, we were able to put those ideas together and get them up quickly. Now, I will say the good news for North Carolina is because of some of the recommendations that the Locke Foundation had, say, over the last 10 years about responsible budgeting. Fortunately, our state, North Carolina, is in a better position financially to deal with this crisis than many other states. So we should be thanking our elected officials for being fiscally responsible in the decade prior, that we now can deal with the situation that we find ourselves in right now.
I think your point about 30 years of research and analysis of these issues is so important, because when the researchers realized that we were facing this, they didn't have to start from scratch. Many of the researchers said, okay, we know about these key areas that lawmakers are going to have to decide what to do, if anything, and we can draw upon what we already know and make some recommendations. And so it was tremendous to see that all of that work, that groundwork, was so important as North Carolina faces just historic situation here. So all of this work, of course, is available at johnlock.org. So folks, if you would like to log on and take a look at some of these very specific recommendations, you can do that very easily.
Donna, can I add one thing to that,
sure,
too? It wasn't just that we did it for North Carolina, too. So we were ahead of the curve on, I mean, getting out there because we had that, we had all of that intellectual capital. We had already banked it. But other states looked to us, too. Other states looked at what we did and actually used our ideas for their own states. So leading in North Carolina, also leading for other states. It's just what we do. We share that information. It is out there, like you said, johnlock.org. But it was our impact is being felt in states across the country.
And Amy, too, once we all get through this and we're back to, quote, normal, what we're hoping, of course, is that some of these issues that have now become front and center about rules and regulations and how they impede your ability to access health care and health professionals when you need it the most, things like that, and the red tape that prevents a business from being able to get out there and take care of what consumers want and need, we're hoping that some of those changes made in a time of crisis will become permanent because they simply make sense.
Absolutely, because they're just good ideas. They're great ideas. Get rid of the certificate of need. There's no reason a doctor should have to ask the state permission to get equipment that he or she knows they need to, or that they need to treat their patients. There is no reason for us not to have telemedicine. There's no reason for a patient to not be able to access another doctor across state lines through telemedicine. All of those things that are good in a crisis are just good public policy.
And not only is this a situation, though, about public policy and recommendations, but this is very personal. And Amy, you and I have talked a lot about this, along with everyone here at the Locke Foundation. Never seen anything like this. Never in my wildest dreams would I have thought that I would be facing the economic crisis that this country is facing. You know, my parents, who are now both deceased, grew up during the Depression, and they knew what it was like to not have a job, and they were dirt poor, literally, and not have something to eat. Now, we are not in that dire circumstance in this country, thank goodness, but we're facing things that many of us never could have imagined here.
You know, you bring up a great point. My parents came of age in the Depression as well, and I remember when my grandmother, my dad's mom, when she died, they found what we would call hoarding today up in her attic.
Yes.
Because she said, I never want to be without again. Mm-hmm. And a personal story for me. My daughter is a hairstylist, made significant money in a high-end salon in Colorado. And she emailed me the other day, actually we were texting, said, this has been really humbling for me. All these jobs that I thought were beneath me, she said, I'm willing to do. She's a personal shopper with Instacart. She's doing hair in people's homes. She is trying to make ends meet any way she can. So we don't even know what the new normal is going to be. But what we do know is that we are having to react. And actually, for us here at the Locke Foundation, try and anticipate what is going to happen in the future so we can continue to provide those sound public policy solutions.
That's Amy Cook, CEO of the John Locke Foundation, speaking recently to Donna Martinez. Among the most disruptive elements of the COVID-19 pandemic, all North Carolina public schools will remain closed at least through the middle of May. Donna discussed the impact of the school closings with Dr. Terry Stoops, Vice President for Research and Director of Education Studies at the John Locke Foundation. Here's Donna.
What's your reaction to this order? May 15th, schools are closed.
I think the May 15th date is actually a very good idea. There were a lot of states that have eliminated the possibility of coming back for this current school year. Some states have already declared that the 2019-2020 school year is over and that they need to start thinking about 2020-2021 school year. But this at least gives North Carolina an opportunity to resume the school year if we find that conditions improve rapidly through April and into May. So it's always something that can be revised later. But I think Governor Cooper was very smart in listening to the State Board of Education, the Department of Public Instruction, and their recommendations that May 15th be the date the schools would resume for now.
We say closed. Closed in terms of in-person attendance. Things are moving online?
Yeah, and it's complicated because the schools, some schools are open providing meal service for families that don't have access to food. So they're technically kind of open for them, but for the most part, most instruction has gone online. But to be honest, it's very uneven. There are some teachers that jumped right online and have students working on assignments that they had planned for those students for months. There are some teachers that are now just getting things posted online and starting to communicate with parents. And as the father of two school-aged children, I could tell you that there are some teachers that are already on the ball and have assignments in the students' hands and due dates already planned for those assignments. And there are other teachers that just haven't sent the kids a thing, except maybe a message saying that they're working on it to suspect or to expect something down the road.
That's fascinating. Is the inconsistency from county to county, or is this within county systems there's an inconsistency?
It's from classroom to classroom.
Oh,
and what we're finding is that there are some teachers that are well equipped for doing this, and there are some subjects that seem to work very well online. I think math is one subject that can be easily transferred to an online format. There are other teachers that are really struggling with this, and there are school districts struggling with how to treat these days, because there's a debate about whether these are legitimate school days or that they will need to be made up. Some teachers are taking attendance, some are not. Some are grading assignments, some are not. So you find a huge amount of variation across the state in what students are being required to do right now and what schools are expecting of them.
What role then would the school principal play? Wouldn't it be just common sense that a principal would say, okay, to all of my teachers, you have to do X, Y, and Z by this date, and you have to do A, B, C by this date?
This is a classic case of passing the buck. The principal says that they're waiting for guidance from the superintendent. The superintendent is saying that they're waiting for guidance from state education officials. State education officials say they're waiting for guidance from the federal government. That's all kind of true. There is a lack of information being circulated right now, and certainly one can argue a lack of leadership. One of the outstanding issues that a lot of people are thinking about right now is what to do about students that are entitled to special education services. This is enforced by federal law, where students must receive these services, and school districts are liable if these kids do not receive the modifications to their education as outlined in an individualized education plan. It's a very serious matter if you violate an individualized education plan. And we've heard mixed messages from the Department of Education in Washington, D.C. as to whether providing an online education does or does not meet the requirements of special education law.
Well, Terry, if there are some teachers doing things one way and actually doing something and engaging their students, and other teachers are behind. Some are grading, some are testing, some are not. What does that mean going forward? How would we know at the end of the traditional school year if a child is ready to move on?
We won't, because state testing will have been canceled. And so any sort of assessment that we would have of student achievement has been eliminated. So we will have no idea whether they're ready to move on or not. Now, it may be sensible for us to eliminate testing, and I think it probably is a good idea, because we wouldn't fare very well with schools being closed right now. But we really have no reliable way of knowing if students are ready for the next grade. And we have a lot of questions that we're going to need to answer this summer as to whether kids are going to be in summer school. If they are, how are we going to pay for the summer school? How are we going to deal with the fact that our school calendar requires the school year to start on the Monday, at earliest, the Monday closest to August 26th, when we may want kids to start school earlier to catch up for what they missed? There are so many moving pieces in this that have to do with federal, state law, and local education practice that we will not know for sure until we get the all clear and schools open back up.
What about high school seniors? How will we know if a high school senior has indeed completed the coursework required to receive a high school diploma in North Carolina?
Well, some of the recommendations are that they would receive credit for the work that they have done already, and their grades as of the day of closure would be their final grade. Of course, this leaves all kind of open questions of things like, what do you do with advanced placement courses? Students that have been preparing all year to take the advanced placement test in order to get college credit for the course now has to face the prospect of not being as prepared for the advanced placement course as they could have been. Now, the AP has announced that they would eliminate some of the questions on the test to level the playing field for students to be able to take the AP class, take the AP test in order to receive that credit. But these are just the questions that many schools and states are struggling to answer right now, and proposals are swirling back and forth from state education officials and lawmakers as to how to ensure that those students can successfully complete the school year and move on to either post-secondary education or the workplace.
Terry, what is your biggest concern now?
Really, my biggest concern is those students right now that are in courses that will be tested and tested next year. In other words, those foundational courses that they will need to be successful going forward. My oldest is a high school freshman taking Math 1 and is missing a significant amount of instruction in Math 1. And so the question will be, how will he be successful in Math 2? Those are the biggest concerns I have right now. Is this school closure going to jeopardize the success of students in future school years?
That's Dr. Terry Stoops, Vice President for Research and Director of Education Studies at the John Locke Foundation, speaking recently with Donna Martinez. That's all the time we have for now, but we hope you will join us again soon for another edition of Headlock.
Thanks for spending a few minutes with us today. If you enjoyed Headlock, we hope you'll share it with your friends. In the wise words of Pinehurst native and WWE founder Vince McMahon, in America, it's live by the sword of freedom of expression and be willing to die by it as well. Until next week, enjoy your liberty. And remember, to be the man, you got to beat the man.
Woo!